You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Today,
we are trying to build tiny machines that allows us to connect concepts of work, entropy, and information at small scales.
Investigating how to convert information to fuel using tiny quantum machines.
This is taking information, which is not an energy, right? Information is a digital thing, say, it's not an energetic thing. Taking information plus heat that comes from the environment and together converting it into a better form of energy, which is work.
I'm Zia Morali. Welcome to a special edition of the podcast from the Foundational Questions Institute. In 2018, FQXI gave out almost $8 million in grants to a number of research teams around the world to devise experiments to investigate whether, at a quantum level, information can be used as fuel. The researchers are exploring how the macroscopic laws of classical thermodynamics, that is, the science of heat, energy transfer and disorder, also known as entropy, may need to be modified in nanoscale devices, where quantum effects come into play. The program stems from the 19th century realization that information is physical. In recent years, technology has advanced to the point that quantum physicists can put this idea to the test with real-world experiments. In this extended report, journalist Jeff Marsh has been finding out more about the historical thought experiments that led physicists to relate information to thermodynamics, and what lab tests of these concepts can tell us about biology and the foundations of physics, from philosopher Owen Moroney at Oxford University in the UK, and from theoretical physicist Janet Anders of Exeter University, also in the UK. But first, he spoke with quantum physicist Natalia Ares, who is running one such experiment at Oxford University. Her team is building nanoscale electronic devices from carbon nanotubes that are just a dozen atoms across, held at temperatures that are colder than deepest space. In this frigid realm, quantum laws apply, so Ares can explore the link between information and thermodynamics in the quantum world.
Thermodynamics is one of the most important pillars of physics because it gives us a link between work, entropy, heat, and those concepts were crucial in the development of, for example, steam engines during the Industrial Revolution because they tell us how we can use resources, thermodynamic resources, to produce useful work. It puts limits on the efficiency with which we can do this. It allows us to understand the limits of these transformations between these quantities.
And your work specifically relates to the second law of thermodynamics. Tell us why that's important.
Yeah, the second law is special because it is linked to the concept of entropy, which colloquially speaking, always increases as time passes by.
So you're interested in some of these really basic concepts around thermodynamics. Of course, when these ideas were originally thought out, people were using macroscopic machines, weren't they? And yet you're trying to probe these questions at the nanoscale. Presumably that poses some serious challenges for someone like you.
So, yeah, we are trying to build tiny machines that allows us to connect concepts of work, entropy, and information at small scales when fluctuations are really important and quantum effects are also significant. In the simplest thermodynamic system, you have a heat bath, you have a working substance, you have a piston, and you have to have control over all these elements. And to do that at the nanoscale, it's challenging.
So can you describe for us what your nano steam engine actually looks like?
The carbon nanotubes, our pistons, have a diameter that is 10,000 times smaller than a single human hair. These nanotubes are suspended over two pillars and electrons can tunnel across. And we can control these electrons one by one. And this is only possible because our experiments are performed at very low temperatures. We work at 20th of a degree above the absolute zero temperature, far colder than even the deepest outer space. And in these devices, we have already demonstrated that one single electron in the nanotube can make it vibrate, playing it like a guitar string.
So that's Natalia Ares from the University of Oxford, and she's created these tiny devices to reimagine thermodynamics at the nanoscale, where weird quantum effects take hold, and where the links between heat, entropy, and information are as yet unexplored, in the physical world anyway. Natalia is part of a multidisciplinary team, which includes theorists and philosophers, who've spent years wondering how thermodynamics might operate at these tiny scales. Owen Moroney is a lecturer in the philosophy of physics at the University of Oxford, and he told me that ideas about thermodynamics and the role of information go back more than a century.
So, if we can manipulate individual electrons, this raises an old problem that actually goes back to the very start of the statistical mechanical understanding of thermodynamics. In the 19th century, when they first started to actually try and explain thermodynamics in terms of the motions of atoms, Maxwell, one of the founders of statistical mechanics, put forward this idea that's now known as Maxwell's demon, that if you could manipulate individual atoms, then maybe you can actually reverse the second law of thermodynamics. Maybe you can make entropy go down again. And the idea would be what Maxwell described as a small, light-fingered demon would be able to interact with the individual atoms and sort them so that if you had a sort of a gas container, it's got some of the atoms are moving quicker and some of them are moving slower. And the demon would be able to take the slower atoms and move them off to one side and the faster atoms and move them to a different side and so gradually separate the gas out into two, one of which are slower, colder atoms and one of which were faster, hotter atoms. And this would mean we'd be able to actually reverse the flow of heat from the hotter to the colder and allow us to actually reverse the second law of thermodynamics. We now actually feel we understand that if Maxwell's demon is just a physical being subject to the same laws of physics, then actually it's not going to be able to do the job that Maxwell thought it could do. And part of the reason there is that in order to interact and sort the atoms in the way it needs to acquire information about the atoms. It needs to find out whether an atom is hot or cold, fast or slow, in order to be able to actually sort them. And that information it needs to store in its memory in order to be able to act on that information. And each bit of information that's being stored in its memory is taking up physical space in its memory, just like your hard drive in your computer. This is kind of interesting because this is now connecting the entropy of thermodynamics to information as it's stored in computers. One of the major developments in this connection between information and entropy came in 1948 when Shannon. When analysing these general notions of information and information storage and sending information and processing information, came up with a measure of how much information you have in a set of signals. And this particular measure had this particular form of P log P, where P was the probability for a particular signal being sent. And he showed that this was actually the kind of one of the key ways to quantify information. What was remarkable was that this P log P form was something that over 40 years previously, a physicist called Gibbs, working on statistical mechanics, had shown was the measure of statistical mechanical entropy. So it's starting to look very much like information and entropy maybe are either very closely related or possibly just the same thing. The real connection was forged by Landauer in the early 1960s and the late 50s. And Landauer argued that to erase information costs work. And he was able to show that if we have one bit of information, if we want to actually regain that physical space, we've got to reset that system, that bit, to being, let's say, zero. And he worked out that actually this was going to cost work. And the amount of work that you would get out of it was directly related to the amount of information you were resetting, you were erasing. And the analogy almost is, it's like when you've got a piston doing work compressing a gas. The same thing is going on in this kind of logical space. You've got these possibilities are 0 or 1, and you've got physical states representing 0 and physical states representing 1. And what we need to do is we need to take that set of physical states and compress them from being the 0 states and the 1 states to just being the 0 states. Well, it turned out Landau does the calculation and shows that actually, when you're compressing information to half its volume, it takes the same amount of work as compressing a gas to half its volume. So the connection now between information and entropy seems so much stronger. When we get to quantum computing, we find that these things aren't necessarily true. We now get a situation where you can have quantum superpositions between zeros and ones. Your states of information can be in a superposition where you have a state that's, in some sense, not quite a zero, not a one, not both and not neither. What happens then? Well, there are two developments that take place. The first thing is actually, we have to actually understand what happens with entropy, the thermodynamic entropy, the statistical mechanical entropy. It was von Neumann who actually discovered this in the 1930s and showed that there was a generalization of the Gibbs entropy to a quantum entropy measure. It took until the development of quantum information in the 1990s to generalize Shannon's information measure to quantum information. And remarkably, it turned out to be, again, exactly the same form as the von Neumann entropy measure. So the person who developed this, Schumacher, in the 1990s, came up with an information measure for quantum information that looked exactly the same as von Neumann's entropy measure for statistical mechanical entropy. So this, again, is really suggestive. But a lot of people have doubted whether or not the von Neumann entropy was really a true thermal entropy, or whether it was just information theoretic in nature. Because to do this, to get this von Neumann entropy, you have to actually, it seems to say that if you have a superposition of states, a zero and one state, that's not a mixture, some probability of zero and some probability of one. Quantum mechanics says that's a very different kind of state, a coherent superposition. And to go from a coherent superposition of zero and one to being just a mixture of being 0 and 1, should, if the von Neumann entropy is right, actually be able to, you should be able to get energy out of that. That would actually be an increase in entropy, and you should be able to get energy out of that. And that's where Jan and Anders' work comes in, and that's one of the things that Natalia's platform is going to be able to experimentally test.
We'll come back to Owen, because he's got more to say about the similarities between entropy and information in the quantum realm. But for now, let's follow the thread. Is it possible to extract work from quantum coherences? Janet Anders is a theorist, and she's shown, on paper at least, that yes, you can.
My name's Janet Anders, and I'm a theoretical physicist. And when I heard of the platform that Natalia is building up, I thought, fantastic, because this platform is a very well-controlled platform that can also go to the quantum regime, so one can hope for superpositions, which is what we're interested in. And so that's basically how we started talking, and that's how we ended up in this project together. A few years ago, my group showed that one should, theoretically at least, be able to extract work from what we call quantum coherence or superposition states. So these are quantum features that are unknown to classical physics. And that's really one of the things that Natalia's team is going to do with her experiments. So this is the really cool and new bit. So if you think of your computer, say your hard drive, it stores lots of interesting information, right? And at some point you might want to sell your computer on eBay. So you need to erase the information on it or reset it to zero. And what Landau's principle says is that this resetting of information has a thermodynamic cost. So you have to pay, energetically speaking, work to do this erasure. So, okay, that was the classical world. This applies to classical physics. And so the theory basically relies a little bit on using this Shannon entropy in deriving this result. And now the question is, how do you extend it to the quantum regime? And of course, we can simply take the equations, and instead of taking the Shannon entropy, we're now going to insert our quantum information entropy, which is the von Neumann entropy. And that's the basis on which most of us currently work on it. You can do that. It's untested, but it makes sense. Now, the question here is, we can ask purely quantum questions now, such as, if we consider a quantum system that's in a superposition state, so that would be a quantum system that's both in a zero and one state at the same time. And now the question we want to answer is, how much work does one have to pay if one just removes the superposition part of that? And actually, maybe surprisingly, instead of having to pay work for doing that, you can actually get work out of this process. So in other words, this superposition that we originally had is a bit like a fuel that can be converted into work. So we can remove the superposition and get work out of it.
But of course, it's not free fuel, is it? This is you're extracting, you're having to put in some useful energy of some kind.
Yes, of course. And that's the thing that gets people. So obviously, we have energy conservation. So work extraction doesn't mean that we get some energy for free somehow. Energy is being made somewhere. That work comes from somewhere. And so if you think back to the gas example that I gave you earlier, it was the opposite way around. There we had to push the gas to compress it. So a gas in a box also has a temperature. So if you have some initial temperature and you push the gas to become smaller, you're actually increasing its temperature. The work that we've put in has been converted into a different form of energy, and this is the heat of the gas. And that's what thermodynamics is all about, converting one form of energy, work that's high quality, into a lesser form, which is heat. And so what I told you last about the superposition states here, this is taking information, which is not an energy, right? Information is a digital thing, say, it's not an energetic thing. Taking information plus heat that comes from the environment and together converting it into a better form of energy, which is work. And then the idea is that by cleverly attaching a miniature piston, this piston is the nanotube string, that nanotube can then be able to store the work that's been extracted. So while removing the electron superposition part of the state, it gives off work, and that's going to be stored into the motion of the string. That's the whole idea.
And the nice thing about that is that you have this accurate readout of the thermodynamic costs then of removing that coherence.
Yeah, exactly. We will be able to see the oscillation of the string. And that would be the very first time someone actually observed this extraction of work from a quantum feature, the superposition state. This has never been observed. Hopefully it all works the way we predicted it. But as I said, there are assumptions in the theory, and it's unclear whether all these assumptions hold.
Of course, proving theories experimentally is no easy feat, and with lockdowns hampering efforts, I wanted to know how far Natalia and the team had got realizing these experiments.
So we can create superpositions of spin up and spin down states in our electrons, and we can manipulate these electron spin states to make them realize a thermodynamic process. During this process, the electron spin will also be interacting with a heat bath. And then what we are going to do is we are going to measure the work involved in the manipulation, in the processing of the quantum information. So in this case, this information is the electron spin state. And we would do this by monitoring the motion of our nanoscale piston. And in this way, we hope to find evidence of the work that theoretically we can extract from coherences.
Is that as easy as it sounds?
No, it's not so easy. So far, we can create superpositions of electron spin states, and we can also measure the displacement of the carbon nanotube with an amazing precision. So this is in the order of 50 atomic diameters. What we now have to do is measure the coupling strength between the spin states and the motion. And this is what it's challenging, and what we have to do in order to use the carbon nanotube motion as a piston and to have these insights in the thermodynamic resources and how the thermodynamic processes take place.
You must be dying to get back to the lab.
Well, we are actually allowed in the lab with restricted numbers now. Luckily, we have developed in my group an amazing set of tools using machine learning to control and tune our devices fully automatically. So that has helped a lot.
so we'll have to wait and see when the experiment will be fully up and running. But what happens if Janet's theory eventually works experimentally, if quantum coherence really can be used as a sort of fuel? Owen talked earlier about how entropy and information seem to be the same thing, in the classical world at least, based on Landau's principle. The amount of heat that you had to generate to do information processing was directly related to how much information changed during the course of that information processing. Will this fundamental similarity hold up when we're able to peer into the quantum realm? Owen thinks no. He told me that the arguments that are used to link quantum information with quantum entropy were all based on classical notions of information, and that he's shown, theoretically, that when it came to processing quantum information, there would actually be an excess heat generation.
If you're performing a quantum information processing operation, you're doing a quantum computation. We're taking some input of some quantum states that are carriers of information, and we're performing some operations on them, and we're producing some output. We're transforming that information by doing some processing on it. So if you look at the amount of information, the amount of quantum information going in, and then the amount of quantum information going out, we've got expressions that can quantify that, the Schumacher information measure. And we look at how that changes over the course of that operation. It can go up, it can go down, depending on what kind of operation we perform. It can stay the same. The natural generalization of Landau's bound to quantum mechanics would be to say that the increase in entropy that we have to do that operation is going to be equal to the amount by which the information goes down. But what we've shown is that actually we can't get to that point for non-trivial quantum processing. Actually, there's going to be an excess. The increase in entropy is going to have to be greater than that. That bound can't be reached at all. It can't even be gotten arbitrarily close to. There's actually additional costs that come in from just the fundamental nature of quantum information processing. And this suggests that actually this strong link between information and entropy is actually no longer as strong. Even all the suggestiveness of them having the same measure doesn't actually seem to follow through for them being as tightly linked as they were in classical information. So maybe it turns out that information and entropy aren't the same thing after all. So far, the work I've done on this has all been very theoretical. What's exciting about this project is that it's actually getting to the point where we can build the platforms and actually test these ideas. Things that just seem to be crazy thought experiments, like Maxwell's Demon. With platforms like Natalia's experiment, we can actually build physical systems to test out these ideas. So we can go down to the quantum mechanical operations on individual quantum systems. And so maybe for me it's really exciting because we can actually test out this claim I've made about there being an excess heat generation for quantum operations. It's only in recent years that we've actually even got to the point of being able to test the Landau's principle from the 1960s. So it's quite extraordinary that already we're reaching the point of actually being to go beyond Landau's principle and looking at whether or not there are additional costs to quantum information as well. So that's really exciting that we can test these new bounds straight away so soon after having actually even come up with the idea that there is such a bound.
You know, really long term, like, you know, 50 years from now or so, or less than that maybe. I really see a lot of the research we do now being very much relevant in biology in the long term, because biology is nature's way of running the universe, right? It's fundamentally, of course, it's small. So the molecular motors or cells or molecules or different structures within our bodies or in nature in general, they are all very small. They have access to quantum features. You know, nature is obviously running motors in many ways. And the question, I guess, is whether or not it makes some use of coherence. So it's this understanding that we're after. And I think it's never going to be useful in terms of we won't run power plants on coherence, you know. But I do really think there's a chance that biology uses it somehow, somewhere. Because it's a potentially an advantage. So that's one direction of thinking. And the other one really is about fundamental understanding of what is information and also thermodynamic quantities in the classical and the quantum realm. It's a very, very interesting subject.
What I love about this project is that we work in a consortium that brings together philosophers, theory, experimentalists, And this shows how far-reaching this project is. We hope to advance the control of nanomachines at the same time that the understanding of the epistemic and ontic notions of information and entropy in the quantum world. And this is the time. Now, theory is far ahead of experiments, but these recent breakthroughs in the control of small-scale devices are now giving us the opportunity to test these theories in the lab. And it's fantastic. It's completely new territory, and that's what it makes it so exciting.
Thank you to Natalia Ares, Owen Maroney, and Janet Anders for speaking with reporter Jeff Marsh. You can find out more about the Oxford Project and the trials of investigating information as fuel during the pandemic in reporter Colin Stewart's article, Lockdown Lab Life, which I'm linking to on the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast. You'll hear more from other groups in the programme on the podcast in coming months. As always, you can reach us by email at podcast@fqxi.org, on Twitter @FQXI, or you can find us on Facebook @FQXI Physics. Thank you for listening. I've been Zia Morali.